Mundus podcast.
Do you want to do some publicity for your podcast, etc., etc. now?
Yeah, I can do that. You know, I mean, I do a podcast called Waffle On Podcast. You can find that at Podbean. Or just type Waffle On Podcast and it's easy. It comes up these days. With my mate Kel. And we'll actually change the format soon. We decided today we do that every other year. We regenerate, ironically, every year. We're gonna start doing more review stuff of current things because there's only so much you can talk about of classic TV and film because we always vowed that we'd only talk about stuff that we loved and we watched. And there's no point in us talking about stuff that we half-hearted about because, like anything, if you're half-hearted about something, the listener's going to not enjoy it and you're not going to enjoy it. So, yeah, I do a podcast called Waffle On, and it's been going for over 4 years now, 5 years in January, so that's a bit shocking.
We're here to talk about your top five rubbishy episodes of Doctor Who, can be a classic or new era. So what's coming in at number five? No particular order, obviously.
Yeah, these are in no particular order. And I have mixed. So there's two classics and three new Who. And I've judged these on if I can go back. Obviously, the classic ones I've seen a few more times for obvious reasons. The new Who ones I've probably seen only twice. And those ones I've done deliberately rewatched again knowing that I was going to be chatting to you. So my first one is an obvious one, I think. I think quite a people don't like this one. Is Love and Monsters. Because one, it's got Peter Kay in it. And apart from Phoenix Knights and The Yard of Max and Paddy, I find Peter Kay, and maybe his first tour, you know, the one that...
Yeah, it was good, the first tour.
Yeah, the one that he's repeated for the past God knows how many years. I find him so, so repetitive and he just annoys me, something rotten. But the reason why I picked this is because of the fact that it's got a great cast. I mean, you've got Mark Wahlberg and Shirley Henderson and Simon Greenall. You know, Simon Greenall, you know, most well known for being in Partridge. And I love the scenes with them. I think it's brilliant. I love Mark Wahlberg dancing to ELO. I mean, Mr. Blue's guy. He's just brilliant. I think he's a great actor. And I'd love to see him as a companion. I really would. And if you just had them talking about, you know, how they was trying to find the Doctor and suddenly that it became more than that. I think it's a bit of a... That bit is a nice homage to early Doctor Who fandom where you'd meet, you know, used to meet people, especially around hiatus, where you'd meet people and suddenly you'd go past the initial thing that got you together and you'd start to form a good relationship and you'd talk about anything else. And it's so beautiful until Peter Kay turns up and he's this hoaxy bloke in a hat, you know, with this terrible twirly moustache, and then turns into the Absorbaloth, which is awful, but kudos to the kid on Blue Peter who designed that, who won the competition. I'm not going to take anything away from that because, you know, it is a pretty cool thing if you're that age and you come up with it, but it goes so downhill and there's no payoff at the end. All the characters die apart from Mark Warren, and then he's got this concrete girlfriend of a face. And I remember hearing somebody say that there's a fairly sexual thing at the end where he puts the slab on his lap or something. I think you can read into that whatever you like. I never noticed that. I don't really go with it. But it just falls flat as soon as Peter Kay turns up.
I'm not a fan, to be honest with you. I was listening to, I think it was a Tardis Tavern recently. I enjoyed that podcast. And I think it was Sean from Tardis Tavern was saying that he really likes Love and Monsters. Like, I mean, really, you know, like, it was nothing he found bad about it. And there are some people that really enjoy it and they really like it's the catch on to what it's all about. For me, it was like a failed experiment. And they've done the Dot Light episodes better, obviously, Blink. Notable one, but it just didn't work for me. And Peter Kay, I think I was talking to Elise last month about this as well. It's that sort of thing. If you have a current comic who's in vogue in Doctor Who, it can either work really well or it can just be terrible.
Yeah,
because Stun Caston, we used to have this with Ken Dodd and whatnot in the 80s, you know, late 80s, which was awful. But, you know, you think like Lee Evans and all that. It didn't quite work, Lee Evans. I didn't hate him being in it, but it just didn't quite click, I don't think.
I think the thing with Lee Evans, though, is the fact that his character was bumbling, but, you know, it was a stereotype character, you know, the guy with the glasses, the white coat, the bumbling, you know. What's the Jerry Lewis film? People who are listening will know what it is. You know, he transforms himself. It's like the Jekyll and Hyde film that he does. Anyway, but he wasn't... Lee Evans' stand-up comedy is kind of like, you know, manic, fast-paced. You know, he's running across the sway, sweating buckets. And that's what you expect from Lee Evans. But Lee Evans is also an incredibly good actor. You know, he was in The Mousetrap. He's been on stage. He's done serious stuff. He did, I think, Chew did Of Mice and Men, if I might be corrected on that. And I quite liked his performance in that. I didn't see Lee Evans as his stand-up performance. As with this, it is just Peter Kay. You're almost expecting to... You know, I'm surprised he didn't break into song, you know, and do one of his pub performances that he does. That's the reason why I don't like it.
It's weird. It's like Love and Monsters and Fear Her seem to get a lot of rage from people, and people really despise them. And I can notice, like, Fear Her on paper is not that bad. But it's just poorly executed. It really is, you know. You don't understand why people... I mean, you couldn't put that as a good rubbish episode, because there's nothing really... I mean, even the Olympics bit at the end just makes you cringe, doesn't it? You know, it's just...
Yeah, it really does. Maybe because of the fact that we've had the Olympics.
and
it weren't directed by Danny Boyle, or was it that one?
Definitely wasn't Danny Boyle, no. But yeah, after one which I kind of assumed would be in there, I'm intrigued to see where you go next with its number four.
Well, I'm going to keep with the theme just on each one. I'm just going to swap it around a little bit. Runaway Bride, we're going to go. Right. Now, it's for the obvious reason, Catherine Tate turns up in it. Now, the reason why I really hated a lot of the episodes with Catherine Tate in, and I was very dismissive, and I really didn't want to watch Doctor Who again when I found out she was going to be a series companion, and really kind of poo-pooed every episode she was in. I would kind of regret that now, and maybe this is a good thing, because I went back and watched the whole series of her when she was in, which is unfortunate, because one of my other episodes does feature her, which I'll come to in a minute. And you know what? I really quite enjoyed quite a few of the episodes that Donna Noble turns up in, because I'd give it a good couple of years and gone back to watch it. So, you know, that says something, I think, that with the writing. But Runaway Bride is unforgivable, because she's totally different in this episode. She is what you imagine her comedy performance, and I don't like a comedy performance, so that's where the first judgment comes from. I didn't like the Catherine Tate show. I couldn't stand the bothered thing. I couldn't stand the old gran. And I know she's a really good actress. That's really annoying, because I've seen her in other stuff, and I know she's really good at Shakespeare. She wouldn't be kept being asked to go back to the IRC otherwise. So I know she's got the talent there, but this episode is awful. She's just screechy, whingy, moany. It's not a very good episode. The TARDIS chase in a taxi is ridiculous, and I hated it for a start, because that's not what TARDIS would do. You know, it materializes, for God's sake. It doesn't float along a motorway. And it's also a thing as well where loads more people would have reported seeing a blue box, you know, going down the motorway, which really kills it. So that's my second episode is The Runaway Bride. I hate it.
There's not much really. I'm trying to think of her name now. Was it Sarah Parrish, who was the bad unit, played the spider person?
Yeah, played the Empress.
Yeah, yeah. And, I don't know, it was one of them sort of things where I was put off initially when I heard she being cast as well. I was thinking, it's fine for a one-off episode, I can cope with that, but actually in the series, you're right, she was much better, and I think her relationship with the Doctor was good, because she wasn't all over him, she wasn't trying to date him, etc., like Martha was and stuff, and that, I think that was refreshing in that way.
It was, and you know what? The thing is that I kind of, looking back at it, I really wish that Freema Agyeman had the scripts for that series of Diana Noble, because I think she's, I really like Freeman Agyeman, for obvious reasons. I think she's very nice on the eye. But I don't think she was given a chance. It was the difficult second album. You know, she came after Rose Tyler, and I don't like Rose Tyler, for a start. Okay, I can't believe she's going back for the 50th, but, you know, that's an old thing. I've banged on about that too many times. Every time me and you talk, I have a go at, Billy Piper. But,
and a weird teeth as well.
And a weird, what happened there with the speech impediment? But I honestly wish that FEMA had the had science in the library, and obviously that would have actually slightly changed it because she would have been younger. But, you know, as soon as FEMA came in and she was like, oh, you're not noticing me, and, you know, and Human Nature, Family of Blood, are two of the best Doctor Who, well, two of the best new Doctor Who episodes ever wrote. Yeah, they still had to go in, you know, that worst, the worst thing in the logos, oh, and you're falling in love with somebody and it's not me. And you think, lame. Yeah, if you'd put her in the Donna Noble episodes, man, she would have been looked on more highly, I think. But, you know, hey, that's never going to change, so we have to believe that's fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the character wasn't really given a very good thing. It was when you're coming after Rose as well, instantly, yeah. It's like kind of like, oh, you know. It would have been interesting, I think we've had this discussion before, but if they had more kind of male companions as well, who weren't interested in the Doctor at all, and they were...
So he wasn't going to go down the gay route, which...
Just two blokes. Like, And I think it would be a bit of a risk, because you've basically got like a template now, haven't you? In a way, so you know, you don't want to, because it's like the whole Clara thing now, you know, it works having one female companion, you know, that sort of thing. So, but it'd be nice if they just tried something a little bit like Harry Sullivan or something like that, you know?
Yeah, because Harry Sullivan was quite hard as well, so you would have had that kind of, before anyone jumps on the bandwagon, that's not saying that I wouldn't want any, you know, a gay companion. Hell, we had John Barrowman, you can't get more camper.
No, of course. Yeah, I don't think anyone would have took it like that, you know. but no, it's just interesting to shake things up a little bit, you know. I think we need more kind of companions like Chameleon, you know. I'm joking. Anyone gets panicky.
Oh, you know, actually, I was watching the Chameleon the other day, and I was thinking, oh, he was never going to work, was it? I mean, to be fair, I think his acting's a lot better than Matthew Waterhouse, but, you know, hey, he's coming back in BFI, in Big Finish. I just read earlier, just before we came online, that Matthew Waterhouse has joined Big Finish. There's a nice picture of him with Peter Davison and the Whingy Australian and Nyssa. So that's something to look forward to. Okay, the next one on my list is, it's going to be another new Who one, Partners in Crime, the first standard Donna one. And yet the reason why I don't like this one is purely because of the special effects. The CGI adipose it's cringeworthy. And this is coming from us who were used to seeing bubble wrap sprayed green pretending to be a worm. I like that. I can put up with that. I can believe that's some kind of strange slimy alien. Having CGI bits that you used to get at the end of your pencil at school is no alien for Doctor Who. It's awful. It really is. It's sickeningly bad. And in fact, I started watching it the other day in preparation for this, and I was nearly sick, and I probably nearly swallowed my tongue in ritual hatred towards it and turned it off.
The problem is that we're then trying to kind of market them as well as kind of like really nice kids' toys and stuff like that, and I'm just thinking, no one's gonna, you know, there's one really good moment in this episode is when Catherine Tate and David Tennant see each other through the window.
Yeah.
To do that kind of thing. That was all right. I mean, Sarah Lancashire was a bit meh in it as well from Coronation Street Woman.
Yeah.
It was one of them sort of things where Russell T Davies is such a marmite with people because he can do really good stuff, or he does like an episode like this, or the Slovene, you know, there's that like, shit that he does. And then he can either veer between like classic stuff. And then that, and you just think, oh god! It was a classic start of series episode for Russell T Davies, because he had stuff like New Earth and Smith and Jones. I quite enjoy Smith and Jones, to be honest with you, but I think it's more enjoyable than this nonsense. I don't know. I like it when it's in the modern day and there's an interesting threat and all that, but, you know, some fat pills and whatnot. It's like loose women gone Doctor Who or something. You know? No.
It is true. And as you say, though, it's like one of those, it's been BBC marketing suddenly taken off and you to see all these stuffed fluffy toys of the adipose. And I remember Tony Vane saying that if anybody buys me that for a present, I'm really going to fuck them off as friends.
And it never happened, so thank God for that.
No, it didn't.
So I don't think there's much more we'll say about that.
Let's not.
No. So what's next then?
Okay, so we got a couple of the last two. Because I did want to put in a couple of classics because I didn't want to just think I was, you know, shitting all over New Who.
No.
So these are quite, I think this one I'm going to talk about now is a fairly obvious one. It's the Happiness Patrol.
Mm.
Now, I know Sylvester McCoy does get a bit of a bad rap, very much like Colin Baker does, and it undeservedly so to a certain degree. It wasn't their fault. You know, the BBC was leaking money away from Doctor Who at this point, and it shows quite badly on it, which is a shame. But you've got the Candyman is the reason why I don't like it. Now, for the start of it, I don't actually like Licorice All Sorts, really. I'm not a great fan of Licorice, so just seeing this on screen is pretty offensive in more ways than one. Sophie Aldred, who as a young lad, I used to fancy something rotten as Ace, which is like running mad because she does a television program called Tree Food Tom. And my daughter really, really likes Tree Food Tom. Of course, she voices it. So there's a strange loop here. But yeah, you've got Sheila Hancock and Ronald Fraser in this, and they can't help it at all. They can't help this episode. Now, whether it's because it's stuck in between Remembrance of the Daleks and Silver Nemesis, you know, two pretty good episodes. And it's, you know, it is awful, and it's awful because of Candyman. This would be something that would really put you off Doctor Who if you first came into it. That, Richard Wise and Ken Dodd in this kind of series, all things that could put you off. But no, it is awful. It's truly terrible.
It feels like a hangover from like the first season of McCoy, where things started to get better once you got the stuff like Greatest Show in the Galaxy, Remembrance, and it was really starting to change.
Yeah.
This just feels like Delta and the Bannerman type nonsense and type and Irani crap. You know, it's kind of very lurid and overlit and campy and just bad cameos, and it's just, you know, I mean, the Candyman, people actually joke to me, like, saying, oh, yeah, I remember that Candyman episode, you know, you know, that's how shit Doctor Who was, you know.
Yeah.
And it's almost like this bad iconic thing to laugh at Doctor Who fans for. I mean, whoever had the idea of putting that forward, it's never going to work. And Bassett's probably think, ah, that's all right. If people, you know, might kind of get in people's heads and they might buy some of our stuff.
Mm.
But, you know, I mean, talking about Silver Nemesis, it's one of them sort of things which I enjoyed at the time because I was obviously only a kid and all that. But the more and more I watched it, the more I realised that the plot is ridiculous. It sounds like it's been written on the back of a tab packet by someone just thinking, right, we'll put that woman in a car who's apparently famous in America, and she's gonna sit there and no one will know what it's got to do with the plot.
No.
And it's just utterly mental. But I'd rather watch it than watch this. So,
I was gonna say, yeah, if you watch that directly after this pile of crap, then you know it is good. I mean, it's funny you say Time in the Valley, because that was one of my original choices, but I was balancing it on, you know, introduction episodes for the new Doctor is always tricky because you've got the obvious things of him feeling a bit crap. But it was the fact that it wasn't Colin Baker, it was just Sylvester McCoy in a wig. And it's as soon as you know that, it does destroy it. But I swapped that for my last one, my last rubbish episode. And it's Time Flight. And it pains me to pick a Peter Davison episode because Peter Davison is my Doctor. And, you know, Tristan Farnan, as I've said to you before, was I think, and still is, one of the greatest characters ever made. You know, all creatures great and small. And basically, he did play Tristan Farnan, but as, you know, in the Doctor's clothing. So it pains me to pick a Peter Davison one. But It's so bad. It was made purely for the fact they had a chance to use Concord as a set piece, and they managed to have Heathrow for a day's filming, and they had all that, and then they stick the TARDIS onto Heathrow, I'm sorry, onto Concord. And then, and this is the reason why I chose it, is when they land the planet, and all you've got is a wheel, and a very wobbly wheel, which is, you know, not even to scale. It's like a shopping trolley. With some cardboard tubing that was probably from some, you know, cling film, painted silver. I mean, it wobbles, it goes all over the place. The, you know, the actors in it are blatantly laughing. I mean, Keith Finkel and Michael Cashman, who play the officers, I know, I think, or John, I'm just reading this from the old scooter with John Flint as the captain. They're laughing as they're acting. They can't even suppress they're, you know, pointing at this, look at the bloody things wobbling there. And it's really annoying because Nigel Stock says, I love Nigel Stock. He played a great Watson to Peter Cushing's Holmes in the early BBC series, and he was also in The Prisoner. And even, I'm sure, even he, you can see him smiling at it. And they must have thought, this is going to be fantastic. We've got Heathrow Airport. We've got Concorde. Look at this. And anything, and then you go to the interior set and you think, oh, God, it's awful. It's going to be laughable. It's really embarrassing.
I was really looking forward to it as well because I hadn't seen it when I'd seen the other Davisons, and I was like, oh, it's good. Yeah. I think I might have read a Target novel of it years ago before, and I was like, oh, and yeah, it was rubbish, and I was really, really expecting more of it because I always liked that era. At the end of the day, you know, when it's like it starts off on in modern day, and I'm always quite intrigued. I like the music as well, and so. Mm. But yeah, it was. I mean, another one. I think I like Davison, but another one I was thinking of in terms of Davison was Warriors of the Deep as well. That's
that's why
you know.
Yeah, that's another one of those ones. But like Time Flight, you can actually judge how bad Doctor Who episodes are on how they are released again in to entertain. These are box sets. Warriors of the Deep is in a box set. Time Flight's in a box set. And so you can judge the fact, you think, you know what, is anybody going to buy this? Well, we better stick it with another shit one, and then people will buy it, and because that's what I did.
What was that thing? It was a really lame box. It was something like... Legends and Myths or something. There's some sort of really lame thing, and they put together things that really like were from totally right. I think it might be something like Time Monster, maybe.
Yeah, and you know what? That's actually on my Amazon wish list because I can't bring myself to buy it myself, and I'm just hoping someone else will buy it for me.
I've only watched Time Monster once. Has that got Ingrid Pitt in?
Yeah, I think it has. Yeah,
yeah, that was good Ingrid Pitt, you see, as opposed to the Warriors of the Deep Ingrid Pitt, you know, which is quite old and that. But I really like. I think I'm going through a total purgatory phase at the moment, and ones that people think, you know, like you've listed a few there, and I agree with all of them, but like there's some of them where someone goes, ah, it's a bit shit, but I like it. I'm trying to think which one I watched recently. I'll describe it. Basically, it's Joe and the Doctor, and you've got they end up on a ship, and Carnival Monsters.
I like
how crap that is, but it's got something about it. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
well, when you look at Spearhead from Space, I mean, I know they've re-released that on Blu-ray, and I don't know whether I'm going to get it, because one, I already own it, but two, the reissue special edition versions on a box set that I want. And it's the only one that's probably decent for Blu-ray, because it was one that was actually filmed on film. But there's a moment in that when Pertwee is in that wheelchair. Oh. And he's doing his comedy Pertwee carry-on film face all the way through the big eyes and all that kind of stuff. And you think, yeah, can't take this seriously now, because it's a bit shit here. But you love it because it's Pertwee, and you kind of accept it slightly, you know, because that's the only thing that it lets you down. And when he's having a tentacle wrapped around his face.
Oh, yeah.
And you're thinking, oh, no, the Doctor's being attacked. But you look in Pertwee's eyes are bulging all over the place, and you think, nah, can't anymore.
Why Pertwee is just brilliant is because there's like a classic scene in Day of the Daleks where them two guys come into the house, and he does all these hiya and all that sort of shouty stuff. It was brilliant. Oh,
and it's the opposite. Like when you know, when he, I think it's when Joe leaves, and you know, you've got that scene where he says goodbye, and he just watches her walk. I think he's holding a glass, two glasses of wine or something, and he watches her go off, and the look of total pure sadness on his face, and you realise how great an actor Pertwee is, you know, and you think, ah, oh, and then you have that where he's doing his karate chops and throwing his cape in front of his eyes and doing a Bela Lugosi, you know, you think, oh well, there you go, but we love him.
It's interesting that the last two pods I've done, no one's mentioned anything about Colin Baker. There's been no Colin Baker episodes in the rubbishy ones.
I think that's sad because we feel so, you know, yeah, there was some really bad episodes of well, I think that the worst episode, vaguely, was the twin dilemma. Yeah. And one, because the twins are so annoying in it. And also the fact that they, you know, it's thrown in at the end of the series, so you kind of forgot about him until he came back, and of course he was quite psychotic in it. But I think because we know the history of Baker's reign in Doctor Who, well, he really wasn't given a chance. No. Michael Grade sacked him at the end of the day, and no, I don't think this is rumour, I think this is fact, and well, no one's going to sue me for saying it, but I believe the reason why he was sacked was because Grade was having an affair with his wife, and so I think that's recently come out, although Colin Baker, but you know, so that was kind of, oh, let's get rid of him, we don't want him hanging around because I'm, you know, nobbing his missus, and we've also come to love him a little bit more because he was on, you know, Celebrity Get Me Out of Here, and he was such a gentleman in it, he was such a lovely guy, and I've seen him at conventions and never got to talk to him, although I will, you know, make sure I go in and say hello to him, and you know, he's on Twitter, and I think people love him, I think. People think, yeah, this is the Doctor who wasn't given a chance. You know, he's always so nice. He's always been pleasant to fans. He always gives people the time of day. He's recently played Inspector Morse on stage. And I think we don't want to go through his library and criticise what is really such a short library of work. And also, of course, one of his episodes is The Trial of the Time Lord, spanned for, what was it, 8 years, something like that. we all went through puberty when that was going on. And I think that's the reason why no one really likes to pick at him, because, I mean, I think that's the reason why.
Big Finish has definitely helped him more than any other Doctor, I think.
Absolutely. He's produced some fantastic stuff for Big Finish, and they really are worth listening to. I mean, I think the same with Paul McGann, though. Paul McGann really has only had one episode, one film, and we don't like to talk about that at times because he says he's half human in it, but that's not to blame him. But, you know, Big Finish has helped him progress as a Doctor, and also Sylvester McCoy.
I listened to Dark Eyes. Have you listened to Dark Eyes yet, the McGann?
No, I haven't, no.
Oh, that, because I haven't listened that much of Big Finish, but I think it was Leeson from Radio Rassons, got a copy of it and sent it to us, and it was brilliant. It was like quite, I don't know if it was like supposed to be near the Time War sort of thing, you know, in essence, but it was much a darker Doctor, and it was a box set of various stories with the Daleks and stuff, but it was a lot more dark and interesting, and it's definitely worth checking out.
Is this new? Is this recently?
I think it was out about autumn last year.
Oh, right, okay.
It was called, I don't think it was part of the regular range, it was just called Dark Eyes.
Oh, right, okay, I'll seek that out.
Yeah, even just a trailer, just to check it out to see what you think of it. But it was definitely interesting. But I've lost my train of thought now. But
well, you're talking to me. We always do that.
any other final thoughts? Final thought. Who's your prediction for the Doctor then? Because obviously this is going to go out before we find out. So.
Oh, well, okay. I've just read something earlier on Facebook, which I think would be brilliant. But, you know, I want an older Doctor. I think we can't go any younger than what Matt Smith was. That would be ridiculous. I know Rory Kinnear has been ruled out. I thought that would be good. But the one that I've just read, that thinking about it would be brilliant, he's a Doctor Who fan. He, you can find this online as well. He wrote as a 15-year-old lad, wrote into the Radio Times to congratulate on their Dalek special. He's Peter Capaldi. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think. All right, you've got to take the Malcolm Tucker thing out, yeah. And I know that he's been in. He was in, what's it called, that really awful program, Torchwood. He appeared in that. But Man, you think about Peter Capaldi, and yes, I know he's already been in a Doctor Who episode. He was in the Fires of Pompeii, but so was Colin Baker, who was in a previous one. I think he would be brilliant. I would love it if he would be the new Doctor. I don't think we're going to get a female Doctor. I think that would be awful anyway, and that's not being sexist or anything like that. It's a bit like saying we're going to have a female James Bond. It wouldn't work. I've got no qualms with him changing colour, skin colour, anything like that. I think that would actually be quite refreshing. That would be brilliant, you know. There's some great actors out there. But you know what? Thinking about Peter Capaldi, that would be awesome. What about you?
Michael French, obviously.
Right, okay.
Him from Crime Travel, obviously. Craig McLaughlin.
Wasn't he the one who was in EastEnders?
Yeah. but thanks very much again, and I wish you well and whatnot with your podcast. Are you still doing your other podcast stuff as well, other than Waffle?
Yeah. We're still running Martian Creative. We've got a load of stuff coming to the pipeline. So at the moment, we're writing some ebooks, and we've got an audio drama coming out that will be available on iTunes. It's working title at the moment is Tales from the Maze House, wrote by Stefan Sornock, and I script it and add the odd thing every now and again. In fact, I scripted it. I'm actually editing it and directing it because it's an audio thing. So I'm doing a lot, really. Mr. Stefan Sornock's the genius behind it, though, and you can find all that at Martian Creative. Hopefully that'll be done soon. It's making me go grey working on it, but it's all good fun.
You're like the Nick Briggs of the Midlands, aren't you? You know?
Yeah. Okay. I'll buy that tagline off you.
Mundus podcast.